The top state tourism official anticipates a big year for travel and a continued rebound in the pandemic. We look at summer travel, the forecast, workforce, and inflationary pain points here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. The state tourism agency Travel Wisconsin launched its summer campaign last month, runs through mid-July, launched in a dozen markets, and the agency says it's a bigger spend this year. Join in how the tourism industry affects your livelihood, summer staffing, what you're encountering as you prepare for the onslaught of people. 800-642-1234. Anne Sayers is secretary designee for the State Department of Tourism. And welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Good morning.
So we're looking at the numbers, travel spending in Wisconsin outpacing the national average for the last 2 years. What is behind that?
It's really exciting to see that since the very beginning of this pandemic, March of 2020, each subsequent month for 2 years, we have been outpacing the national average. And I think that has a lot to do with a couple things. One, there has been a significant amount of relief funds pumped into our tourism economy by Governor Evers. More than $200 million already have gone to the arts and entertainment, tourism and leisure economy. So that has really helped, and it far outpaces what we are seeing in other states. So we're really excited about that. I think there's a lot to be said about what we've done in terms of developing Wisconsin's brand and investing in the campaigns that bring that brand direct to consumers and excite them and inspire them to tour Wisconsin. And then there's a lot to be said, of course, for our hospitality industry that has never worked harder and is doing so much to continue to welcome visitors.
I want to key in on working harder, because in the pandemic, we heard people in restaurant and hospitality industry retooling their lives, finding more stable careers outside this industry. So as you see these tight labor times, do you worry about bringing back the workforce you need?
You know, as the Secretary of Tourism, I'm charged with staying focused on the fun of travel, marketing Wisconsin to our visitors. But you're absolutely right. Workforce is certainly something we care deeply about. It's been a challenge, not just to tourism, but to all industries, and not just in Wisconsin, but across the country. So, you know, it was present before the pandemic. It certainly has been exacerbated by the pandemic. We're seeing that too in tourism. Here in Wisconsin, we currently have record unemployment. That's a really good thing. But we are also seeing that, you know, for every two jobs that are available, there's just one job seeker, meaning that if every single job seeker was employed, we would still have jobs available. So it is a tough challenge. In tourism, there's a couple things to celebrate. One, we're seeing that more folks are pouring into the tourism workforce than last year through these J-1 visa programs. These have been a really important programs for supporting some of our major tourism destinations. Things have loosened up in that area for 21, so we're expecting that to be a little better this year. And the other thing is that Wisconsin has a lot more folks employed in those younger age brackets than other states. And a lot of times those folks choose to take summer hospitality jobs. And that's a good thing for tourism as well. But, you know, it remains a struggle. Our industry understands this reality and they're just working harder. Like I said, at the very top, they're automating where they can. They've adjusted hours in some places, and they're just doing everything they can to continue to bring the hospitality that visitors expect from Wisconsin back to the consumer. And I think that's really the important thing, that as the traveler, you're still going to feel that world-class hospitality that you expect from Wisconsin, because that's the piece that we're protecting.
Talking with Anne Sayers, Secretary Designee for the State Department of Tourism, as we look at how the state is preparing for the busy summer travel season, the barriers, challenges, as we see high inflation, we see a tight labor market. You can join in from your perspective, 800-642-1234. Jeff is here from Delafield. Jeff, hi.
Yes, good morning. My comment is that to some extent, I think our tourism is almost a victim of its own success here in Wisconsin. A lot of the areas like Door County, and I would assume some of the areas in northern Wisconsin, are just so crowded that it takes away from what they were always meant to be. And to some extent, I question if we need to be spending as much money to promote tourism as we are when our tourism areas are so overcrowded and they're just not what they used to be. And that's really my concern. Thank you.
Jeff, thank you. And what is your take on the overcrowding? Specifically, Jeff mentions Door County.
Well, you know, we love helping travelers to discover the unexpected in Wisconsin. That's kind of the job. And with 49 state parks, 15,000 lakes, thousands of miles of trails and hidden gem restaurants, unique lodging and attractions, there are just so many opportunities for travelers to get out there and make memories in the furthest reaches of our state. So we really have a lot to offer in the way of wide open spaces. I think that's another reason we've been popular through the pandemic, ways to kind of stretch your legs a little bit, get away from everyone else. And our job, we're really excited about driving those visitors to unexpected places, to explore every corner of the state and move them around from some of the more expected places. So I hear what Jeff is saying. I'll also add, third largest industry in the country, in the state. And even in the pandemic, during our toughest year, we were employing over 157,000 Wisconsinites, our friends and neighbors whose livelihoods are supported by this industry.
But how do you do that? How do you move people into discovering different things when the tradition has been to go to Door County over and over, or that same vacation place in the North Woods? That really goes against sometimes that human tendency to go back to things that they've liked.
Well, we are the Wisconsin Department of Tourism, and we are so excited to celebrate every county, all 72 counties, every corner of this state. And we have a lot of tools to do that at our disposal through marketing. So there's a lot of different consumer touch points, from everything you see on television to certainly digital and social media. A lot of work's being done right now in the audio space, which will be of appeal to this audience. And what we can do there is just talk about the unexpected parts of Wisconsin. So we're not naming necessarily different counties, but we are saying here in Wisconsin, this is the kind of place where outdoor recreation is not just plentiful, but it's so accessible and easy. You don't need fancy clothes and a fancy car. Just strap on some sneakers and get out there and do something different. Try something new. Try a new restaurant. Here's a supper club maybe you haven't thought of before. So we have a lot of ways of reaching consumers and encouraging them to find new places.
When you look at inflation, though, gas prices up about 50% from a year ago. Hotel costs jumped nearly 30%. Airline fares up 24%. What will you do in the wake of those inflationary pressures as people, cut back on spending?
Yeah, you know, it's really interesting, actually, when it comes to gas prices. This is one we've been tracking all along. And the good news here is that consumer sentiment seems to be remaining steady. And we've seen this before during times of tough, difficult pricing in the consumer market. But travelers coming out of this pandemic, what we're hearing and we're seeing from data sources all over the map is they are not going to let those vacation days go. So we've seen the worst of it. And we know that when we lose vacation days, sometimes they're lost forever. And this time, travelers are still planning to take those trips. It's possible they might go shorter distances when they drive, and that's actually really to Wisconsin's benefit. We're situated so perfectly between some major markets in Chicago and Minneapolis, and of course, surrounded by interested travelers in Iowa as well. So we're expecting actually that those gas prices will not hurt the influx of people. The other pricing that you're seeing may change their habits a little bit, and that remains to be seen.
Do you have any tips for people to save money on travel as they look at the costs that they're facing for their summer travel plans?
Yeah, well, certainly sticking to those road trips and exploring Wisconsin, getting on travelwisconsin.com, and maybe looking for a few of those out-of-the-way places. And we also have lots of deals and promotions being run throughout the summer. From destinations looking to attract those visitors. So there are some ways to do some bargain shopping and put together an itinerary that still has thrills and smiles for every single person in your travel party.
We have Wisconsin Department of Tourism head Ann Sayers giving us details on what the summer could hold for people vacationing in our state, the economic rebound she sees. Join in on Wisconsin Summer Travel Plans, how the tourism industry is doing from your vantage point, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. We're discussing the economics of tourism on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, the best year on record for tourism in our state was 2019, when 113 million visits in our state generated an economic impact of over $22 billion. Those numbers from the state tourism department, how will this year stack up compared to pre-pandemic tourism, especially with high inflation, the great resignation? Join in your tourism perspective, 800-642-1234. Ann Sayers, secretary designee of the state tourism department, with us for about 9 more minutes. Let's bring in Lauren now in Beloit. Lauren, hi. What's your perspective?
I'm a Door County addict. I moved to Arizona for about 15 years, came back every year, and went to Door County. I fell in love with it. I just wanted to refute the earlier caller's perspective. I stay away in July and August. It is crowded, but I've also discovered with much joy all of the other things in Door County, the back roads, the little gift shops here and there, the quieter side on the lakeside, and just do those activities. One of my favorite activities now, I'm too old to camp anymore. Newport State Park is one of my favorites. And last year I discovered the dark sky section of the park, and I am absolutely in awe. I suggest everybody go up there. Is the parking lot crowded? Yes, you would never know it because it is pitch black and everybody is so quiet and so respectful of what they see in the sky. So I just wanted to encourage people, yes, if you go in July and August, the roads are going to be tight. You can go down the main drag in Fish Creek and Sister Bay. Yeah, there's going to be a ton of traffic and a bunch of people, but there are so many other places to go and really enjoy it. And it is such a beautiful piece of Wisconsin.
Lauren, thank you. Yes, Lauren, thank you so much for those tips. And Ann, what do you make of that? Taking the back roads, looking for the quieter places from, as Lauren described, a Door County addict.
Yes, I just love Lauren's perspective. She's my kind of traveler. You know, we have 5 different state parks and islands spread across Door County. So there's a lot of room to spread out and check out new and different things. I love that she mentioned the dark skies in Newport. There are only several hundred, I think maybe 500 at this point. You can check my facts on that. Dark sky designations in the entire world. And one of them is right here in Wisconsin in Newport State Park in Door County. And it is spectacular. She is right. Everyone should make it. Make time to go visit that.
I'm wondering, you know, as you look at those back roads and different places to stay, how is the home sharing market, the home share companies, changing the travel industry in Wisconsin?
Yeah, they're certainly very popular, some of those vacation rental type properties. We also have a lot to offer in the way of hotel and lodging, just unique places to stay where you cannot get hospitality like that anywhere else. So we always encourage travelers to kind of explore deeply and see what's right for their travel party and for the kind of vacation experience they're looking for.
Do you see growth, though, in home share and in the home sharing market?
Yeah, certainly.
What, you know, I'm thinking about Airbnb, which was founded in the depths of the Great Recession. And I want to pick your brain here, because what type of startup will be, do you think, the next Airbnb to emerge from this pandemic crisis? And what sector might it be in of tourism?
Oh my gosh, what an interesting question. You know, I don't have a line of sight into that right now. Right now, we're seeing a lot of our traditional sectors in terms of restaurants, lodging, attractions, all coming back. And something we like to say is that they're recovering, but they're not recovered. And we see a lot of room yet for them to grow as we follow what experts are predicting is not just a dial, but a switch when it comes to the recovery. I'm sorry, not a switch, but a dial. So we're dialing back toward those 2019 numbers that you mentioned. And so that's where we're seeing the emphasis right now, and certainly room for growth.
That's interesting you say that, because the U.S. Travel Association, you know, really puts that, what you're saying, I think, in perspective. $13.4 billion in travel spending in 2019, a 28% decline in 2020 for Wisconsin, 14% drop last year. And that type of data, and I know it's how you crunch the numbers, it really signals to me that tourism hospitality rebound, that will take way more than one season or two seasons. That, to me, signals a long road ahead. What do you make of that?
Well, the important way to look at those numbers is that in many ways, leisure is back. The parts of the tourism economy that continue to struggle a little bit are in terms of business travel and group travel. So meetings, conventions, large sporting events, all of them are coming back. But certainly in the case of meetings and conventions and business travel, it's just a little bit slower. So those parts will lag while leisure continues to grow. They are also predicting an 11% increase this year. So in across the country. So $11 trillion in tourism economic activity this year. Wisconsin is poised to take advantage of that with great campaigns, with stimulus funds that are helping to keep our doors open, our promotions running, and helping visitors to think about Wisconsin when they make the vacation plans we know that they will be making.
Ann Sayers with us, Secretary Designee for the State Department of Tourism, as we look head into summer, look at travel season and what Wisconsin could expect ahead. You can join in with your insights, 800-642-1234. And I know you picked like 12 markets to do, you know, heavy on marketing about Wisconsin tourism, but how do you choose which markets to really target for Wisconsin tourism?
I love that question. You know, so often marketing seems like all fun and games, and it absolutely is. I just love it. But there's really a science to it as well. So we actually went to our top three data vendors and had them put together what is a proprietary propensity to visit model, looking at a bunch of different questions like, who travels in the largest party size? Who spends the most money when they travel? Who's most likely to travel? Where are we currently over and under indexing? And the results of that came back and told us what kinds of travelers are more likely to get out there and where they are located. So that told us as a state, when we put those taxpayer dollars to work for marketing tourism, where are we going to get the biggest return on investment? And we came back with these 12 markets, 2 in Minnesota, 3 in Iowa, 2 in Illinois, and 4 here in Wisconsin.
Those seem to mean that those are people driving into Wisconsin.
That's right. We definitely, and this was even prior to the pandemic, we were starting to see that the drive markets were returning more on investment. And then certainly after, you know, during and now as we come out of the pandemic, drive markets continue to be very important.
I want to look here at Wisconsin's largest city, Milwaukee. The Bucks canceling a Game 7 watch party at the downtown Deer District Sunday after 3 separate shootings Friday night, injuring 21 people. How do you see crime affecting tourism?
Yeah, safety is so incredibly important, and my heart absolutely breaks for those affected and certainly our community in Milwaukee, which is such an amazing city. The issue of crime is one that is really multifaceted. It's not easily solved, obviously, but our partners in the tourism industry and across government have remained committed to continuing to keep our travelers safe. And our tourism partners, you know, they are truly the backbones of our communities. They live there, they eat at the restaurants, they attend the events, they walk along the streets, and they care deeply about their neighbors and their visitors. And that's why they're working closely with local, state, and federal law enforcement to ensure that visitors have, you know, truly peace of mind when they choose Wisconsin destinations for their travel plans.
So when you say tourism partners, who do you mean by that?
Oh, we have such great partners in terms of specific to the destination, you know, promoting local cities, towns, counties, as well as our representatives in the restaurants and lodging and attractions, chambers of commerce and others all have a stake in tourism and in the safety of our travelers.
We have less than a minute left, but, you know, if there is a permanent shift in working from anywhere in a large part of the working world, do you see a segment of, digital nomads becoming a segment of sort of the, travel industry?
Yes. And actually, we're already seeing it. We're calling them Zoom towns. And northern Wisconsin seems to be benefiting really well from that right now. But folks who are choosing quiet, out of the way places to set up camp in terms of work and play. And it's really nice to see them choosing Wisconsin.
Will you have more of a focus on those types of travelers in the future?
We're really focused on leisure travel, okay. Not so much the work piece of it. And I think there's a lot of room to grow right there. Lots of work left to do.
Anne, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Anne Sayers is Secretary Designee for the State Department of Tourism. Ahead this hour, how is Wisconsin's childcare crisis and childcare deserts affecting your family? 800-642-1234. Join in on childcare. We have a social work professor on the challenges and the breakthroughs in the early childhood care industry. News update is next. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about the realities of the daycare waiting list and churn in early childhood education. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The State Department of Children and Families estimates that 54% of Wisconsinites live in a childcare desert. That means that there's no licensed providers in a geographic area or not enough slots to adequately serve the number of children in that area. Join in on what you figured out, how your community, your company is addressing the childcare crisis. 800-642-1234. Alejandra Ross Pilars is an assistant professor in the Sandra Rosenbaum School of Social Work at UW-Madison, where her research is on childcare, parental employment, experiences in early education. Alejandra, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so give us your baseline assessment as to how Wisconsin is doing now with access to quality, affordable, accessible, licensed childcare in our state. What is your read there?
Yeah, so, you know, things have been difficult for a long time, but we've definitely right now, access to childcare is quite difficult for many families in Wisconsin. So our team at UW-Madison has looked at the supply of childcare in Wisconsin over the last about 15 years. And what we're finding is that access does not seem to be getting better and has likely gotten worse for some families. So the supply of childcare has been pretty stable overall in the state, but we see really big differences when we look at the center-based sector, which are, you know, providers in those in center-based programs compared to those in family childcare. So in the family childcare sector, we see declines of about 50% of supply. So that's the number of like licensed slots that providers are licensed to care for. We see an increase of about 10% in the center-based sector, but that hasn't you know, made up for the decline in family childcare. So in those communities that really depend on family childcare, especially rural communities, it's things are really difficult. And like you said, families are more likely to live in childcare deserts, especially in rural areas.
That is a really sharp decrease in family-based childcare, you know, settings. What might be going on there?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's something that we have been looking into and are continuing to look into. What we know about family childcare is that providers earn really low wages. So in some of our work, we're finding that given the number of hours that they work and the amount of income that they bring in, they're earning just above the minimum wage in terms of their hourly wages. So about $7.50 an hour. Compensation has not really increased for them over the last 15 years. And, you know, working conditions have only gotten more challenging. So we're expecting them to have more education, to meet more regulations and do more, but we haven't compensated them accordingly. And so we know from other research that providers who have family childcare providers who have left the field really talk about, you know, lack of compensation, lots of difficulties sustaining their business, so finding enough kids, as well as, you know, difficulties complying with regulations. And they are the sole, you know, person running that business.
I was they're sole proprietors.
Yeah. So they're exactly. So they're the ones who are caring for the kids. They're making sure that they're meeting the regulations that they need to maintain their license. They're buying food, prepping food. They're doing all of those things compared to in the center-based program, right? You would have a director who's in charge of administration. You would have people that help with food, maintenance, things like that. And they're really doing all of it. So it's a difficult job, and compensation is so low that we think that is driving a lot of what's going on.
Can we look at the slight uptick then in center-based childcare? And I'm wondering if you're seeing it in the public or private sector. Are these centers in the for-profit realm, like chains, or are they affiliated with the nonprofits?
Yeah, that's a good question. We haven't looked specifically at nonprofit versus for-profit. So In our study, we include all licensed childcare centers. And so that would include both private and for-profit. Not so much those in public schools. So we also know there's been a large expansion in Wisconsin's four-year-old kindergarten program. A lot of those are in public schools, some in the private sector. But so we're seeing just across the board and center-based, including all those types of programs, an increase.
Well, and the reason I asked that is because, number one, religious organizations, faith-based organizations had once had childcare as part of their missions as well. But also, if there's a rise in for-profits, it means someone's having a payday. Someone is making money in this model. And it's obviously not the classroom teachers and not the caregivers. And I'm trying to understand, where is the model working when you do see expansion?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I think, like I said, I think center-based providers have been able to weather this a little bit better. And they charge higher prices for care as well. They also receive higher rates of reimbursement from the state when families participate in the Wisconsin Shares Childcare Subsidy Program. Mm. So center-based providers get more from the state for their services compared to family childcare. So that's part of it. I would say no one's really making a ton of money from this. So providers operate on razor-thin margins, center-based and family childcare. And so it's really, I would say, it's not working well anywhere, in the sense that all types of providers are having trouble recruiting and retaining high quality and highly trained staff. And that's really a big part of the problem right now, is that we see, you know, I just talked about the supply of the licensed slots, but right now we're also seeing lots of problems with under enrollment. So even when childcare centers have spots that available that they could care for more kids, they don't have the staff to fill those spots. So they're under enrolled relative to what they could be providing. So I would say it's hard to say where it's working well right now. I think providers across the board are having trouble, finding ways to make this work.
We're talking about the childcare crisis in Wisconsin with a person who studies it, a scholar, Alejandra Ross-Pilar's assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Social Work. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Jason is with us from Woodruff. Jason, hi. What would you like to bring up?
Hi there. Well, first, I'd like to give a shout out to Mrs. Juries and Mr. Paul Maleko, the teacher and the chess coach at AVW in Woodruff, Wisconsin. Hmm. And thank them for keeping a long and old tradition alive where...
Oh, goodness, Jason, you're breaking up. Can you still hear us?
Kids love chess. In fact, my kindergartner took a second place in the state of Illinois chess tournament when he was a kindergartner. Anyway, that's another story.
So it sounds like chess being an after-school program helping with childcare. Is that what you're driving at?
Well, yes. You see, when we bugged out from Chicago, my family's had a bug out in northern Wisconsin for almost a century now, since World War I. And the first thing we did when we got up there was kind of ask around to the different elementary schools if somebody might do a virtual chess program through chesskids.com.
Mm-hmm.
And AVW was the only one in the area that actually had a chess program going. And the coach said, well, I'll give it a try. And then he and I worked with the kids during the pandemic. And then when the pandemic, got to the point where everybody who wanted to be vaccinated was vaccinated, and everybody who wanted to be masked could be masked and whatnot, it was safe to return to in-person chess playing. We started up the third to fifth grade chess again.
And that is after school. Alejandra, I want to just jump in here to find out where you see the after school segment of childcare going.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, unfortunately, we didn't look at after school programs for like K to 12 or, you know, older kids. In our study, we've really focused on the 0 to 5 age. I think after school is also care for kids, elementary age kids, is also a challenge. Just anecdotally, we hear that it's difficult for parents to find after school care as well. But our study really only focused on the 0 to 5-year-olds because that is where we've seen, you know, substantial underinvestment compared to K to 12. And we really wanted to find out how families were able to access care for those younger kids who are not yet in school.
You know, in 2019, 2020, as the pandemic set in, women made very tough decisions and choices about career and childcare. And then we heard the reports that, you know, the childcare crisis kept women out of the workforce. What have you found there and its impact on what you're seeing in the childcare crisis?
Yeah. So we, in Wisconsin specifically, we have not looked at the access to childcare during COVID. So our data stops in 2019, but I can tell you a few things that we know both nationally and some of the questions we've asked in our surveys in Wisconsin. So we saw a substantial decline during COVID in the number of childcare centers and family childcare providers that shut down. So about a third to a quarter shut down during the pandemic. Many reopened, but not all of them. So, you know, there's many families who would like to go back to work, who are looking for care, but are not able to find available slots. In Wisconsin, I started talking about this issue with enrollment. And what we see in Wisconsin is that providers are still operating at lower enrollment than they were pre-pandemic. Hmm. So this is important, right? Because you may have the same number of childcare centers, for example, who are open, but if they're serving fewer kids, then that means that there's lower access for families. And so I think the pandemic sort of made worse what was already a challenge in the childcare sector of difficult working conditions. We saw providers saying that they are more stressed since COVID. Their job is more stressful, that inability to hire and retain staff is more difficult. So this has really just exacerbated the ongoing problems that were happening before the pandemic. And that means that in turn, families are having more difficulty accessing high quality and affordable care.
We're discussing childcare with the scholar who studies it, Alejandra Ross Pilar, is assistant professor of social work at UW-Madison. Join in on solutions to childcare. What's worked for your family, your community, your workforce, your business? 800-642-1234. Back in a minute for more conversation with Alejandra Ross Pilar is here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the childcare crisis, the solutions you see on the horizon. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. The state says the estimated annual state economic benefit of having affordable childcare is over $3 billion. State grants have helped providers bridge some gaps. The state's Child Care Counts Stabilization Payment Program, its application week currently underway for May. The Main Street Bounce Back Grants are due at the end of June. Join in on the childcare juggernaut, families, providers, businesses. It's 800-642-1234. Alejandra Ross Pilar, assistant professor of social work at UW-Madison, studies this issue and stays with us. Alejandra, I just mentioned two grant programs, and I'm wondering, grants for providers, has this been a solution or a Band-Aid to the problem?
Yeah, the great question. I think with the good news is we've seen lots of money, lots more money than we have in a long time going into childcare during the pandemic through these COVID relief funds. The state has, you know, allocated lots more funding, like you mentioned, childcare counts and other programs to supporting providers. There's about to be an expansion as well of the reward stipend program, which helps supplement wages for for providers in the next year and a half, which we're excited to see, you know, what impacts all these things are having. I think the bad news is that that money is going to go away. So all of this was part of, you know, things like ARPA, the American Rescue Plan Act that, you know, were specifically during the pandemic. And so once that money runs out, given that things are still difficult, even with these additional funding, I think the concern is that we're going to be in the worst situation potentially, that we really need to see long-term and significant public investments in order to solve this issue in the long haul.
And along those lines of public investments, Steve from Madison called, couldn't stay with us. And Steve is wanting to know if other nations, other countries that offer childcare rely on the government to finance those services, or if it is left to private enterprises, the private sector, like here in the U.S.
Yeah, so we invest much less in early childhood than most other countries that are comparable to us. So we are sort of an outlier in that sense, that we don't provide as much support for early care and education compared to other countries. Most other countries have significant public investments in kids and during 0 to 5. And that's because the 0 to 5 period is really a critical period of development. And so investing during that period has payoffs over the long term for society. And so the answer is we are sort of an outlier in that sense, that we underinvest in kids during that early childhood period.
So why is childcare still an employee issue, a family issue, and not a business issue, a doing business? I mean, why isn't childcare part of the business infrastructure of how a company functions?
Yeah, well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that it is a business issue in the sense that it's important, you know, both for families, for the economy, for businesses to be able to find and keep workers. We need parents to be able to work. So it is definitely a business issue. It's just not a way that we have typically thought about it in this country. We've left it to families to figure out as a private issue. But I think what we're seeing now is the reality is that this affects all of us. This is not just an issue that has ramifications for parents of young kids, but it really hinders the economy for being able to grow more, parents to be able to work. And like I said, this really is has been studied. The high quality early education has been studied a lot, and we know that it has the benefits really outweigh the costs of investing in this, but it's just not something that we have traditionally done in this country.
So as you look at the research and the unique approaches to helping solve this crisis, what is out there that different firms, different states are trying to do to address this?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple things. I mean, in the short term, we know that financial incentives for childcare providers to stay in the sector work. So we know from Virginia, for example, that provided they studied providing significant financial incentives, about $1,500, to teachers in early care education. And they found that turnover reduced by 50% in the short run in over 8 months. And so providing these sort of increased compensation incentives to stay in the field will work in the short term. I think, again, in the longer term, we need more significant investments. So things like, you know, subsidizing the cost of care for more families. We have a Wisconsin Shares child care subsidy program that subsidizes the cost of care for low-income families, but it doesn't reach nearly as many families as need help paying for care. So expanding the number of families that are eligible, or expanding the amount of money going into that program so that providers can get reimbursed at the amount that it costs to pay to provide high quality care. All of those are things that would help in the long term more stabilize the early care education sector.
Alejandra Ross Pilar is assistant professor at UW-Madison School of Social Work, focused on childcare, early education research. You can join in on how you've approached childcare, made it work, or something that is just not working for you, and what impact it has on your budget. 800-642-1234. Alejandra, the Federal Occupational Outlook Handbook says childcare workers in America, median pay in 2020 was a little over $27,000 per year, $13.22 an hour. You can work at so many other places and earn more. So how do we here in Wisconsin address the wage crisis first?
Yeah, well, I think we need to increase wages and compensation, right? We in Wisconsin, we see similar numbers, so about $13 an hour for childcare teachers. And so we really need to increase compensation. I think what's happening right now is this has been a problem for a long time, but what's happening right now is that we have a really tight labor market. And so there's many more other jobs that early care education workers can go to that will pay them more and that, you know, will or might be easier to do. Taking care of young kids for 8 hours a day is not an easy job by any means. And so they have more opportunities to go to other places that will pay them more. That's definitely contributing to this crisis.
Let's turn to making this a policy issue for a moment. What steps should lawmakers take to address the childcare workforce shortage?
Yeah, well, again, I think in the short term, providing more compensation. So you can do this through the reward stipend program, which, as I mentioned, is going to expand right now. Is hopefully those expansions will help to stabilize things in the short term. But again, in the longer term, it's really thinking about expanding the amount of public investments into the sector by paying, you know, helping more parents pay for care, increasing reimbursement rates, expanding both public pre-kindergarten so that it you know, covers a longer part of the day and reaches more families, as well as the child care subsidy program that, you know, allows also younger kids 0 to 3 to access child care. So it's all of those things. Just we can take the existing programs that we have and just shore them up more so that they reach more families and pay providers for, again, the cost of providing high quality care, which is not something that we've done so far.
And very quickly, as you mentioned, family child care centers, do you anticipate any of those family child care centers opening back up, those sole proprietors?
You know, I'm not I think it's unclear at this point. We've heard anecdotally that demand for family child care has gone up during the pandemic because these are smaller settings, mm-hmm. less risk of COVID transmission. I think unless we increase, again, compensation for those providers, it's going to be really hard to draw more people into the field because there's going to be too many other opportunities to you know, work in other jobs that will pay them more. So hopefully if we take some steps to increase compensation, improve working conditions for those providers, we will see increases in some of those opening back up.
Alejandra, thank you for joining us.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me.
Alejandra Ross-Pilar is assistant professor in the Sandra Rosenbaum School of Social Work at UW-Madison. Research at the intersection of childcare, parental employment, and early childhood education. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.